You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Welcome, everybody, to Finding Hermes. I hope, as always, we'll give you the means to walk through those doors and lay your cards on the table, because these are strange times, and we need that gnosis more than ever. And I am truly honored and happy to have an individual who has informed my life and influenced and helped me through these apocalyptic times. And that she will say, by apocalyptic, we mean the veil is lifting. And that is Jessa Reed. Jessa, thanks for coming on Finding Hermes.
Hello. Thank you for having me. You're so good at intros.
Some people might disagree. I don't know. But it's got to be done. It's just got to be done. I mean, it's sort of a catharsis for me when I do my intros, and it has helped out. And so what are you doing these days, Jessa? I keep bookmarked a lot of your podcasts and YouTube videos when I need, some assistance with addiction or manifesting or other things that, again, how you've really helped me out in my life. We've talked how I was started listening to your podcast when the pandemic hit, and it was such a breath of fresh air. And again, it really informed me. But something I envy about you is that you, as you say, you pivot a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people, as we talked about, I'm a Taurus. I will stick with something, a piece of clothing, a project, a person, to the end of time. And you just pivot. How do you do that? I mean, it's like you're here, you're there, then you've disappeared. You're on Twitter and then you disappear, and now you're on Patreon only, right?
I am on Patreon. My Awakening OD podcast is still on. I just don't put a lot of them out. Mm-hmm. I hope to do more of them as I continue to recover. I've just got done being sick for 15 months with Lyme disease. But most of my adult life has been a journey of embracing my own energy and my own way of operating in the world, and continuing to give myself permission to be just who I am today. And, I stick to things that I'm into, but I have emancipated myself from the idea that I need to stick to things that I am no longer resonating with. So, which is a lot. That's exactly how I got clean, was I just went,
this is it.
we did it. You know, I messed.
Wow. So it wasn't some dramatic confession, rock bottom thing like I had a couple of times in my life.
No, it was somewhat absurd. I remember watching, I was full shooting up meth for years and full blown, just completely out of my mind, lost my teeth. And was missing for a long time. My family thought I was dead. I mean, I was out there, and people would try to get clean a lot, and they would go to detox, and then they would come back, and we would get high, and then they would talk about wanting to quit. And I was always just like, I feel like you're wasting the meth. Can I just have your meth? I don't think you understand the point of this. You're going to do it. Fucking do it. you know, don't grass is greener. Give me the bag. You go back to detox. You're wasting this. And I honestly believe that that is why I got clean on my first try, because I waited until I was done. Now, granted, that's not a luxury everyone has. This was also before fentanyl. So, you know, people weren't really dying of meth. It was extremely rare. And, you know, there are other drugs that are more Russian roulette. And I guess they're all Russian roulette now that fentanyl is there. But nonetheless, I hate calling it life coaching, but I do some sort of personal session thing. And I get a lot of people who are afraid that they are addicted to weed because they're using it too much. And, you know, I just don't think that a shame spiral helps anything. You know, I think if you are using something and you don't want to be using it, for me personally, my take is, because food was my greatest addiction, take the time that you're doing it and look into it rather than just hating yourself and judging yourself, because you're far more likely to continue to do it, you know? And observe the experience. What am I doing here? What do I think I'm going to get out of this? Why am I doing it? Oh, is this a fit with the weed specifically? Is this a physical compulsion? Have I just connected talking on the phone to smoking weed, watching a movie to smoking weed? Because these are things that are pretty easy to untie. You know, what am I, or is it something deeper? Am I trying to escape? Am I contracting? Am I whatever? And kind of observing our own experience and reverse engineering out of it, rather than, you know, but that's not what I did. I actually, was trying to get away from an abusive relationship. So I was moving across the country. And I had arranged to have meth sent to me because meth was real regional. You couldn't get it everywhere. And when I was on the airplane, I had a moment, just a moment of clarity. And I was like, Jessa, tweakers are not going to get to the mailbox. They're just not. They're going to do your meth. You're going to buy meth. Yeah. They're going to do it. And if you do get it, what are you going to tweak by yourself in Delaware? And I literally just went, fuck it. I'll just quit. And that was it. I mean, I did go into recovery because I needed a, you know, I went into 12 steps because I needed a place to, I needed people who I spoke my language. You know, I had been really out of society for a while, but, yeah, but that's just kind of how I am. So I understand, you know, I had a lot of guilt when I was in 12 steps, listening to people who are like struggling and fighting for their lives. Cause I was like, I mean, given the activities I participated in the last, you know, 5.5 years, I mean, I don't think anyone would say I wasn't an addict, but I realized that I didn't maybe have, I was doing drugs because I enjoyed doing drugs. I enjoyed what they provided. When I no longer needed it, I stopped doing them. And, I, if I desired to do them again, I would do them, you know? And so I always had a little bit of guilt when people were like celebrating my clean time and whatever. Cause I was like, this is like, do you know what I mean? It's like you being like, congrats, you did 4 hours today on Instagram. And it's like,
yeah. But one thing, when I listened to your podcast about your addiction, and again, you talked about it was time, you were done. You, as you said, you went out, you talked about why you went out, because like many of us who are sensitive or have, for lack of better words, a third eye, you felt you didn't belong in this world, that it was all bullshit, a construct, 100% agree. But I always wonder, why was you going out so different than me? Because with me, and again, I wasn't a meth head, I was a coke head. It was painful every minute of the day, except for those few seconds where the rush would kick me, it would kick in and I'd be sweating and hallucinating and jumping up and down. And even when you came on my podcast last time, we talked about it and I still didn't understand what was so different. Of course, part of me is like, God, I want to know, because then I can go out again. Of course, part of me is always trying to, you know, rig the game. And then I realized kind of recently what it was, and the difference I feel was honesty. you were honest about why you were doing it, why you were going out on the streets and so forth. But with me, I was living a complete lie, and it was the lie and not being authentic that was killing me. I mean, I was, again, going out of college, having kids, having a job, going to church on Sundays, and I was just an alcoholic and a drug addict. I mean, I would do things like pick up my daughter at school in kindergarten and walk in. It's like, oh, hey, honey, let me go use the bathroom. The kid's little bathroom, snorting coke on the sick, or, you know, going to funeral and, oh, I need to cry, it's too emotional, going into the bathroom to snort coke. But the point was, it was a complete lie, and the lie was killing me, physically killing me. And you chose the path of honesty, which is amazing. How did you do it? Because drugs obviously turn everything upside down sooner or later.
So I actually learned that I wanted to be an honest drug addict because I did have a year-long coke habit. Mm. And I don't know what it is about coke that makes it so conducive to exactly all the things you described, but man, did I have so many miserable experiences with doing my entire paycheck in a weekend, lying, you know, covering it up. Oh God, all of that, when I started to do meth, I literally ejected myself for my entire life. And that's why, you know, my parents thought I was dead for a while. I was in my early 20s. I completely left my life and lived in a complete freedom, underground reality, you know, full of other meth addicts. And I didn't have to work, and I didn't have to do any of those things. And I was completely honest. And there was no fooling anyone into thinking I wasn't doing meth. My teeth emancipated themselves from my face. There was a lot of freedom. Now, that said, I really was the only person having a good time. So I make it sound like, go do meth and go through your awakening. But like, nobody else had that. I think for me, I was raised by a meth addict, and I had so much resentment and so much self-worth stuff based on my experiences with a mother that was addicted, that I think I had to go do that in order to reconcile my childhood. And then I had to leave society because society was the biggest issue for me. I felt like I was being gaslit by reality. So I wasn't walking between the worlds like you were. And a lot of people who really struggled while we were using were people who truly believed we're the bad ones, we're the outcasts of society. And I didn't believe that. I believed we are the ones who have figured it out. Mm-hmm. Everyone in society is running on a hamster wheel. I don't know who's controlling it, but like they don't have agency. They're doing things they don't want to do. And so like, I had all this like perhaps misplaced righteous indignation, you know? And so I was at the time very aligned with my beliefs. I was living my truth. And then there did come a point where I had done it. And that's the thing for me, is if I've done it, if I have completed the experience, I don't have a desire to continue to do something that I have mastered. And I have mastered it. I did it. And so I now wanted to, and I had healed a lot of my broken parts. Once again, not most people's experience on meth. And so I was ready to embrace, like I had gotten to a place where I was like, I could be myself in that society without becoming a cog in the wheel. And so then that's what I went and did. But that, you know, that was I had been pondering it, I think, for like 6 months. I had been like, could I go back? You know, the meth got bad, you know. Mm-hmm. The government had cracked down, so that also helped.
Yeah. It was time. But again, you kept your self honesty, your self knowledge. You were still working it. And I love that part where you talked about how you met your dad, and your dad simply said, maybe Jessa, maybe it's time to do something different or take another option. And you were like, oh yeah, I can take another option. Again, I can pivot to a different adventure in my life if I want to.
Yeah. Well, my dad said it was brilliant because I had to get dentures. So he paid, I hadn't seen him in 6 years. He paid for the top ones and then said, you have to visit me before you get the bottom ones. So I went out and visited for 2 weeks, ran out of drugs because I was waiting for someone to mail them to me. And
Delaware, right?
Delaware, yeah. And so I slept most of that trip because you coming off of meth takes a lot of sleep. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, we had a brief, I said at one point, this is a long, and my dad was in, was he 4 years or 7 years into the program by then? But I said, you know, this is the longest I've ever been sober. And he got a little bit excited. And then I was like, oh, I'm not saying I'm going to be sober. I'm just saying that I have observed that I'm laughing and I'm smart and all these things that I had kind of attributed to meth, but I'm realizing that maybe these are just my things. And I discovered them while on meth. And, but I'm not getting sober. So don't come at me with that. And so when he took me and dropped me off at the airplane, he said, if you get home, if you get back to Portland and realize that things are a little stale, you have a home here. And if he had said any other language, because the lifestyle that I was living was so insane that, like, you know, most people would use language like desperate or painful or whatever, but to say stale, anyone who knows me knows if you want to get in my head, imply that I'm doing something I've already done. And so, because I'm extremely hipster when it comes to reality. And so I got home and, you know, got robbed and the boyfriend was sleeping with the ex and all, you know, the drama. And I went, oh, dang, I've done all of this. This is, in fact, stale. And I got clean within weeks, a couple weeks I left. Yeah, I'm eternally grateful that my parents were both recovering addicts because they never did an intervention. I'm pretty anti-intervention. They never did. They never drug me to rehab. They didn't jump in and rescue me. You know, they made me work to get to put my life back together. So they gave me a little bit of assistance, but it was like I had to pay thousands of dollars to get my driver's license back. Like they paid for it, but I had to pay them back, you know. And I see a lot of people's parents trying to rush their kids through the addiction process, the cycle, and they create a lot of. If you make someone get clean before they're done, there goes that light again, and they fail, they will start to believe that they can't get clean when in fact you just can't get clean right now because you're not done.
Exactly. Yeah. As they say, when you're ready. And I also think it's fascinating that your, as you call it, alien encounter, or Tim Dillon, what did he call it? Alien school. That is that happened during in the middle of your addiction, right? You had a near death experience.
Yeah, I was less than 1 year in.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
and the experience was yeah. Maybe you could share it with the audience because the blue ball and all that, and the download, if you would, from the otherness out there.
I was always seeking, and that was part of what I found like I was going to find on meth because it made the veil very thin. It made reality not feel real. And it already didn't feel real to me. So it felt like reality synced up with how I felt. And so I was also doing a lot of like psychedelics and club drugs and stuff, which when you're tinkering with a lot of that stuff, you know, it gets even thinner. And it was right after Y2K. I want to say it was the 10th or 12th of January, 2000. I was at a club called The Ohm. And I just passed out and, you know, foamed at the mouth and was rushed to the hospital in a taxi cab. I don't know how I died. I have a couple of theories. And I don't know how long I was dead or anything else. The doctor was very rude when I woke up because the people who had followed me to the hospital informed them that I was on drugs. 2000, they don't give a shit about you if you died on drugs. And so I went, while I was passed out, I was just in this big blue ball. And I understood that the ball was the home that I had always been homesick for. I said that just homesickness running in the background. Like, I'm not from here. And didn't have a body, but I was what I would now call an individuated consciousness. I got that language. I was myself, but I was also one with this ball. And it spoke and not in words, but my brain, I felt my brain translate it to words when I came to. And it said, you did everything you came to do. You learned everything you went to learn. you can stay here if you want, but if you want to go back, you can, we got a job for you. And so the thing that always struck me was that the desirable thing was to stay, you know, it was almost like you can be let off the hook. So we went back and forth a little bit, and then I opted to go back, had to live my entire life to get to the present moment. And so I was a baby, then I was a toddler, then I was a teenager. Mm. So I guess that's what your life flashing before your eyes, but it wasn't before my eyes. I was in it. I was in my body. It was actually very jarring. I was sucking my thumb when I woke up. And before that, I believed myself to be a backslidden Christian, because in my seeking, I did a 5-year stint in born again Christianity. And so I kind of traded that out for stand-up comedy and eventually meth, but I still very much believed in Jesus. That whole thing still vibed with me. I didn't buy into I struggled with the you know, shitting on women and authority. It's never really been my thing, but I was down with JC. And anyway, so that I was like, oh my God, I get it. God, we're a part of God. I understand it fully now. And so I then, for the next 5 days, was unconscious in and out of what I would now call the hypnagogic state, where I met the aliens, and the aliens were like, we'll be your guides. And basically they said that I knew this in the ball. I don't know how to explain this. I knew this in the ball. I would say like the ball told me this, but like, it's really hard to explain when you're in that consciousness. You're just like, you just know things, you know, they don't communicate. Right. Communication's very clunky, and it's not how we do it anywhere else. But basically the reality that we had been living in, that Earth was a stage where we play. And the reality that we had been living in, the game that we had been playing, was a dichotomy-based, duality-based, like right, wrong, like dark, good and bad, whatever, masculine, fear-based reality. And we were shifting. We were about to shift into a completely different reality. That reality was going to die. And we were moving into a feminine, love-based reality where everything's one. One of the things they said is light and dark will cease to exist, good and bad will cease to exist, male and female will cease to exist, which was like wild in 2000 to hear. Now it's pretty obvious what's happening. Basically they said I would help to unite a tribe of galactic beings who had seeded themselves into the reality to help orchestrate the shifts. And so, you know, all of that was going through my own categories of reason at the time. What I now know is, basically just means I would be talking into a microphone to inspire people to do their own healing, because just healing while planted in this grid shifts the reality for everybody. That's the Cliff Notes.
Great Cliff Notes. Yeah. So, and it's interesting, but we call them aliens, but is that really the appropriate word? I mean, because when I listen to you talk about them, I think of, I don't know if you ever read like John Keel, The Mothman Prophecies. He talks about the super spectrum, and there are these beings that appear as angels one time and aliens in our days, but ultimately they have a completely different morality. Although John, I think, takes a different, he thinks that they're cosmic shit posters. They like to screw with humanity. They like to help humanity, but it's kind of like the trickster god, Prometheus or Hermes, or it's whatever they feel like, and we have to do it. But with yours, they seem the same, but they're actually benign, right?
Yeah, these are Syrian beings, which I apparently also am. And they are ninth dimensional Syrian beings. And all this shit's pretty arbitrary, right? Because we're all just part of one, my understanding is part of one thing at the top, but we express in a million different ways. And so it's essentially alchemy to have the Syrian influence for this thing on Earth. But like, ultimately, most of us are just like playing this game from, you know, we've been Pleiadians, whatever. And so they do, I kind of call them aliens because it's funny. But they are, they literally look like aliens, but they are not like Martian, you know. The mainstream understanding of what aliens are is pretty limited and doesn't resonate. So either galactic beings would be a better way to put it. But part of what I have found is that once language has been used a certain way, you kind of have to turn it on its head. I've just always called them the aliens, but it's kind of tongue in cheek. I mean, they literally are aliens, but they're not what other people are referring to as aliens. Everyone else calls them guides, but it's just so cheesy. My guides.
We won't get you on a new age tangent. Well, yeah. I might later on, because I have my thoughts too, and I've ragged on new age and most religions on my podcast forever and ever. And after you got this download, did you ever two things? Did you ever wonder, was I looking for them or was I chosen? And two, you were still out as a drug addict even after this incredible experience.
The drugs really helped with what I had to do with them. Mm-hmm. Once again, totally not recommend. Nobody else has experienced this. This was very specific to me. It would have been very difficult to dive in and kind of learn everything that I learned with them and try to like exist in society. Also the hypnagogic state for me, because I was a meth addict that ate and slept, but like sustaining a night of hypnagogic, you know, sleep, pretty easy to do on meth. So yeah, for me, that's like where I was trained, and then I just kind of graduated. So, you know, could just be meth induced schizophrenia, as I have no problem considering sometimes. It's stuck around for an awful long time. But you asked one other thing and I lost it.
Did you think you were chosen or were you seeking them out, or little of column A, little of column B?
When I was a kid, I knew that we were in some sort of ant farm, some sort of TV show, that our lives were a movie and that the stars were watching the movie. And that was not anything anyone said to me. And it was just kind of, you know, something I knew to be true. So I was 14 or 15 years old before I stopped turning off the lights when I changed my clothes. I didn't want them to watch me get dressed. And then I just knew that, like, I don't think you guys know it when you get old enough that they're like, Santa's not real. Also, magic's not real. And, you know, whatever, humans are it. And I was like, I don't think this is right. And so I was seeking for sure. And I thought I was chosen for a bit. And then I eventually realized that I am one of them and that I was, you know, you forget who you are when you get here. And so they're just my friends. Like the aliens are just my friends, and they're just on the other side of the physical reality, kind of helping me through things. So yeah, not chosen, just kind of like, this is the game that I wanted to come play.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're now sharing it with others. And what would you say is an addiction, if you had to define it? Obviously, you and I were in AA, and they'd give us, you know, an allergy of the body, an obsession with the mind. It's a mystery. But what do you tell your clients, other people, what is an addiction? I mean, you and I had completely different experiences in our addictions. I didn't have any mystical. That's not true. I did have a lot of hallucinations and vision. Oh, never mind, for another time. I guess it's time for me to remember that shit.
I think it's different for different people. I know that a lot of people are seeking substances to escape pain, you know, to numb out.
Pain, yeah.
Yeah. I do not enjoy numbing out. And one thing about meth is it will amplify the pain. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have drama and you do some meth, it's like, and you have to face it. You have to go into it. I've only ever liked uppers. I drank for 1 year of my entire life. I drank the year I turned 21. I drank a couple 40s in my teen years, but I don't like being numbed out. I was disillusioned with reality. And so I was looking for the door, and that was it. And once I found the door, you know, I did it for 4 more years. And then now it's like, I don't have the desire to do psychedelics for, you know, therapeutic reasons. And I like to be sober. I enjoy it. I found what I was looking for inside of myself and here on earth. And I don't want to be altered. But I think it's different for a lot of people. I think for a lot of people, it is, it is a shame thing, you know, it is a desire to escape. It is it's a desire to shut down the voices in your head. It is a feeling, apart from everyone else. I think we will see a massive dip in what we call addiction in the next decade. Because we are finally getting language for all these things. We're realizing that, we have an epidemic of mental health stuff, and that it's not, I don't personally believe, and I'm not a doctor, so who gives a fuck what I believe, but I think it is that the society is set up in a way that it is not conducive for humans being humans. And I think that if you aren't, if any part of you is not, you know, we're born and raised to kind of, and programmed to just kind of work in someone's factory is really what it is. Our morals are about that. And, you know, we have this program and it's not conducive to the way that like energy works, specifically for someone who is creative or artistic. And so it's the dissonance is so strong that I think that people, they alter to opt out. And that as we get more information and become more empowered to make our own decisions, to follow our own energy, we will realize that we don't have to alter to opt out. We can just simply opt out. Just say, no, thanks. I don't want to work in your factory. So I'm not going to believe I'm lazy because I want to rest for a fucking day, you know?
Yeah, it'd be like Elton John's Yellow Brick Road or one of those, or Super Tramp's The Logical Song or whatever song you like, but you can actually live it and feel it. I like your definition of awakening, Jessa, because you simply say, because it means in the context, it doesn't matter where you are in your life. It just, you call it a cleaning process, a deprogramming. I think that's where we should all start is, how do I deprogram myself? Because I'm a fucking walking robot most of the time.
Oof. Yeah. It's a lot. It takes a really long time. I do a lot of sessions with people who are like, I'm stuck. And I'm like, when did you start to wake up? And they say, last April. And I go, oh.
Long journey ahead. We all
You're
got
not
one.
Stuck. You're in it. The only way is out is to play through. So.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of work, but that is, again, the programming is so, it's so hard and intense. And why the programming? Why did we humans do that? I mean, there was a million other options. Do you think this is still fallout from Atlantis or something else took over in our culture at some point?
Well, to get wildly woo, what the theory I'm currently working with, because I'm still, I didn't understand what dimensions or timelines or any of this shit meant 3 years ago. As we play these different games here on Earth, which my understanding is that it's pretty arbitrary. It's just, we are limitless beings and limitless sparks of consciousness. And we just create worlds to see what it would be like. It's very experimental and it's, and then we wipe out civilizations, and we are currently in the midst of civilization being wiped out slowly.
People need to accept this. We are at the end of a civilization, and there's nothing wrong with that. We had our time.
Yeah, I mean, we did it. It's just us. That's the other thing that the aliens were like. You guys were the dinosaurs. It's the same. It's the same energies. We're the dinosaurs. We're the whatever. And so you're kind of grieving a version of yourself. It's a mass ego death, but like death's not real. So, you know, it's a shedding of some avatars. It's some interesting things. My understanding is some interesting things are going to happen where we're not necessarily shedding these avatars. A lot of us that we're on a very short reincarnation cycle for this game because of the parameters of the game with the masculine and the duality and the everything else. You kind of have to die every, you know, 80 years. Because up until very recently, people didn't grow. They didn't shed their ego while still in the avatar. Right. So like, you know, when I was born in the 70s, when I was a kid, people truly believed that people don't change because like fuck tons of people didn't change. Who you were when you were 20 is who you were when you were 80. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when people aren't evolving, you have to just like kill them, you know, they have to die quicker. So we have shorter reincarnation stages when we are dead asleep and then longer when we're awake. Anyway, I go on these tangents and then I don't remember what I was. So this specific age, we disconnected the emotional body from this and just lived through the mental body and specifically through the ego, the third dimension, my understanding is the ego. So, this is what happens when there's no emotional body, when the feminine energy is suppressed. I mean, think about the days where, and this will lead to addiction, where you're not checking in with your body. You're not checking in with your feelings and you're just letting your mind fucking ruminate. I mean, is that not hell on earth, right?
A prison for your mind is,
And so I don't personally super subscribe to this idea of an externalized enemy with agendas. It's there. It is there. That's definitely a game you can opt into. But ultimately, there is nothing outside of us that we are not a part of. And that is externalized enemy, agendas, whatever you want to think. Everyone has an agenda. And some people's agenda is to accumulate power, whatever. But all of that and the greed and the money shit and the disease, it's all comes down to a massive imbalance between the ego, the mental space and the emotional space and a dominance of masculine energy. Not that if we were dominantly feminine, there wouldn't be a different form of toxicity, sheer chaos, I think. But, so as the divine feminine is rising and we are all getting tuned into our own, just the idea of like believing that like some beings have masculine energy, some beings have feminine energy, that you don't have both. I mean, it's insane. It's an insane way to play. We're completely cut off from who we actually are and how energy actually works. And so it just to me feels like the aliens, when I first was in alien school, talked about entropy all the time, where we create realities and then they're kind of cool in the beginning and they eventually evolve to the point that they eat themselves, they self-destruct. And that's just where we're at right now. So everything's just so ridiculous because we did it. It's like done. And now it's just looping. It's just like a fucking scratch CD. It's grating as hell. So we are simultaneously in the birth canal of the new world and in the death process of the old world. And, you know, you can be in both of those at any point in the day, but for some reason we, you know, opted out of a, meteor, I can never say that word, or a tsunami or whatever we usually do to take us out. So we were like, well, why don't we just die slowly over the course of 15 years? That'll be fun.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
And it's interesting because most of my friends like you and others who have, I don't want to say the word psychic, because again, like alien, the words fail us. And I think we need, and hopefully we're getting a new language for these things. I'd say individuals with open channels. And that's the best I can do right now.
I like that.
But they're very positive about what's even, but they're very positive about what's coming down the pipe. Even if it's the end of an age, everybody's very positive. So I'm excited, but at the same time, part of me doesn't want to believe it. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, everybody needs sort of the surly Gnostic in the corner to, you know, keep everybody honest and edgy. But at the end of the day, you see this is all leading to something very positive soon.
Yeah. I think 2027, we'll know. It'll be a completely different reality than we're currently living in. And if that seems improbable, go find some documentation of who you were in 2015, and go watch something. You know, somebody told me, you might have been the one that told me, Woodstock 99. Are you the one that told me that was like, you know, literally just go watch something from 10 years ago and realize like how far we've come and how much we've shifted society. I'm not saying everyone's going to die. There's a difference between the end of civilization and like all life being wiped off the planet. But I do think that there's a shift, and I don't get too far into this because I don't, I like to decide how crazy I sound publicly, but there is a shift happening. And Earth will be hospitable for some and not for others. And I don't, and that's not like a hierarchy thing. That's more or less like who decided to stay and play for whatever. And I don't really, you know, I don't get too far into that stuff because it doesn't matter. You know, nobody's guaranteed shit. I don't know if I'm staying.
Yeah, yeah. Today is the end of the world as far as I'm concerned most of the time.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to live. So I can't complain too much, but again, we're all, like you said, we're here playing a game. And I hate this word too, clients, but the individuals who you help out. I gotta come up with a new language. What is their biggest concern or fear or is fear? What do you see? What are you working with mostly with people these days?
Mostly deprogramming codependency and internalized capitalism.
Good points. I was just listening to your podcast today, and I, of course, I had to remind myself of codependency. When I went into rehab, Jessa, in the late 90s, of course, the idea of codependency would never, I rejected it as, again, a solar male at the time. But when I went into rehab and there was some guy, some gang member, reading a book by Anthony DeMello, Awakening, and I was just like, you know, beaten up. Well, what are you reading? And this gang member reading this New Age book goes, oh, this really helped me with my codependency. I was like, give me that damn book. You know what I mean? I was like, if this guy's, you know, sold and went down the journey of codependency, what would you say? Addiction to people? Is that another form of addiction?
I was in a full-blown... what's really funny is I started the podcast Soberish to be a recovery podcast, and then I didn't like it. So I was in the process of shifting it to a like woo podcast. And I put on an episode that was, I think, called Not an Addict. If not, that's my episode. I did an episode of Mormon and the Method of that. But the following week, I found out that I was in a balls out codependent meltdown, active addiction. And I thought codependency meant either the thing where people are enabling an addict, or I thought it meant you're afraid to be alone. And I love to be alone. Mm-hmm. I'm almost always in a relationship, but I have a very long relationships and it just kind of happens. I fall in love, but I love to be alone. You know, I'm introverted. And so, I just never even looked into it, but, I was in one of these relationships where I wanted to be in the relationship they didn't. And I kept trying to, you know, earn their love or whatever. And, I was out of my mind at this point. And so I was, feverishly watching YouTube tarot videos, which is something that someone does when they're codependently out of balance. And they kept saying, whoever's watching this right now is codependent. I'm getting big codependent energy. And so I was like, I'm going to Google that. And I Googled it. And I found a book called Codependency for Dummies. Codependent No More is another one that people talk about, but Codependency for Dummies is, for me, I'm not much of a reader. And so it's very helpful when the page has a bunch of graphs and then like changes the font sizes. I have extreme ADD. And so anyway, I found out about things like secret low self-esteem, trying to rescue people and fix people so they don't leave. And I like all of a sudden all of my dynamics opened up and I was like, oh my God. And so as I went through this journey and healed this for myself, I was able to get out of this situationship and I, you know, realized that I had some codependency stuff with my siblings. And I realized that the reality that we are coming out of is inherently codependent. It's externally focused. And anytime you are externally focused and externally experiencing your reality rather than an internalized version, it is codependent. You're dependent on your external circumstances when you are reactive to your environment, which is actually a feedback loop because we are actually just only experiencing our own individual projections. And so reality currently is inherently codependent in every way possible. And so much of the awakening journey is internalizing your validation, your autonomy, your authority, your, what is it? It's enemies, authority, and validation. And that's a big part of this shift is we're shifting from an externally experienced reality to an internally experienced reality, which is why we'll get to see like magic and levitation and everything else is because, we won't be in a feedback loop. Currently, if you experience something, you go see, there's proof that, and it's like, no, it's just proof that you projected that out.
I think materialism is over. I think telepathy and these other gifts are one time this stuff was very scientific, and I think we need to get back to it, but it seems just so that codependency might be even more dangerous than drug addiction, because I'm, for example, looking at your life, you still kept your sort of core Jessa through an addiction. But when you get addicted to people, isn't that the danger? You can just vanish.
Lose yourself. Lose completely. Yourself.
Yeah. There's no you anymore. Nothing. Just wispy pain and bullshit.
I'm finding examples every day of ways in which I make myself small. I seem like someone who marches to the beat of her own drummer because I am. But I don't have boundaries. I'm just learning boundaries right now at 44 years old. I used to carry myself like someone who wouldn't take your shit when I, in fact, very much take your shit. But because I carried myself like that, people wouldn't try it, you know? And so, but that like wall, that external gate kept me from being able to experience a lot of things. I had a lot of shame about my own sensitivity and emotions. And so as I started to let that wall down, I realized that I actually meld. I'm very impressionable and I meld with my reality. And I have a huge fear of people being mad at me. And so as I'm realizing this, I have like a platform and a lot of people paying attention to me and a lot of people who had expectations of like what I was, which is odd. It's odd to start to follow someone and then decide what you like, what are you following me for? You know, you're following me from my perspective. Anyway, it wasn't bad. It's been very bad for other people. It wasn't that bad for me, but It did, people were projecting onto me. And, you know, I think because I'm touching on a lot of these things like trauma and awakening and stuff, people would start to project onto me and make me responsible for their stuff. And then I would be like, oh, okay. And I'm like trying to fix people's fucking stranger shit. And while being just decimated by Lyme disease. And so I realized that the Lyme disease being overtaken by these microbes was very similar to, or very, it was an allegory for being, feeling my energy field with other people's energy. So I had to learn boundaries. I had to learn no. I had to learn to tell people, like, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but this is not my shit. Do you know what I mean? I haven't done anything to you. Your expectations of me are not my responsibility. I just had a situation this weekend, like a personal, I have really limited the amount of like personal relationships I have while I get this figured out, because I realized that if I get triggered, I don't feel well. And
your body
so,
don't lie.
No. And so I realized that most of us are hypervigilantly taking everyone else's temperature all the time. Mm-hmm. And deciding and navigating what we want to do and what we speak up about. Most people are indirectly people pleasing at all times. And that I realized that that's actually manipulation, and that that is actually like I'm trying to manage your experience by deciding, I'm not going to tell him that I don't want to do this because that would offend him and blah, blah, blah. So like we're all just having like fantasy relationships with people because we're not advocating for ourselves. And then we're like, we end up resentful. And when you really trace it back, it's like, I never even fucking told him no. I just decided that he would have been offended by me saying no. And then I did something else and I've been mad at him. He doesn't even fucking know what's happening. And we're all out of our minds.
The whole projection. Yeah, I'm so bad. Somebody will invite me to something like a wedding or something, and then I get pissed off at them. Don't they know I'm so busy and that I've got, how dare they? Like, they just invited me somewhere, but I'm already projecting and creating these scenarios, and it gets exhausting sometimes.
Yeah, because we don't know that we can just say no. So I have gotten very good, and this was the gift of Lyme disease, is I used to be someone, and you know, because you've tried to do multiple podcasts with me, you're probably not going to get it done on the first schedule. I had to learn to be like, nope, can't do it today. I think I did your podcast last year, and before. I had brain fog.
Right.
And I think that was the last podcast I did. I did two podcasts that week, and then I didn't guest on another podcast until Duncan Trussell in March, because I had brain fog during that episode. And I was like, I don't need a bunch of me with brain fog on the internet. Do you know what I mean? Nobody else needs to see this. But it was very hard for me as I started to deteriorate to be someone who like wasn't reliable. That's internalized capitalism, you know, that you couldn't count on me, that I wasn't a person of my word. These are all these stupid morals that are just like, people are just walking around going, ha ha ha, I'm the person not of my word. You know, like it's malicious rather than just like people are struggling and now they're at home feeling immense amount of guilt for not being reliable. I hate it.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And what techniques or tools do you have for people? Sometimes I get asked and I'm like, well, I kind of learned from Jessa. I just grab from the ether, meditation here, therapy there. I just have this whole menu of shit that comes to me and goes to me. And I just, everything changes. So I'm always changing. What self-knowledge, what are your tools to tell people about self-knowledge so they can know the cleansing process of awakening?
The biggest thing I want to say is it is an involuntary process. It just happens. So I'm not a big fan of like going and looking for shadow work to do. The way that shadow work happens is you'll have a little dust up in your reality. You'll have conflict with someone outside of you or something. And then when it shows up, you'll be uncomfortable. I keep wanting to say discomfortable for some reason. You'll be uncomfortable and then you will resist it for a second. You will contract and then recognize that you're contracting because reality sucks when you're contracting and then go into it. So when shit shows up, I don't try to escape it. I just go into it. A lot of times spiritual bypassing is like trying to just throw everything happens for a reason at a, at a very third dimensional thing and it doesn't go away. Go into it, face the things you don't like about yourself. The quicker I can get to how am I creating this? And that's not blame. Blame and fault are also just idiotic. It's just a stupid concept. What a waste of fucking time blame and fault are. How am I creating this? Why is this not, why is this happening from a victim thing? Cause you're in a disempowered state. You're not going to figure it out. But like, why, if everything's happening in my best, for my greater good, why, what is this? And looking at it, observing it, observe your own experience, dig in, learn the lesson. And then you're going to feel like, oh, you're going to feel great. You're going to be at the, you know, you're going to be downloading and feeling amazing. And then eventually it's going to be time to figure some more shit out. A lot of times we believe our programming is us. And so that's a lot of what these deaths are, is this programming that's not in your best interests and it's not benefiting you in any way, is actually hurting you. It comes into conflict. And it's because you're getting these downloads of like your true self, your true essence. And then it's as if you got an operating system download into your phone and now your apps are outdated. So your internalized capitalism, your internalized misogyny, your lack mentality is not, doesn't work with this. And so it's time to work through each one of these apps. I don't recommend some fantasy idea that you're just like, now I got it. When people first wake up, they go like, oh, I got it. You know, it's normal to think you figured it out and you don't have to get your ass handed to you a few hundred times to realize. My 2021 advice is ask your body. Very little of what you need exists in the rumination of your mental space. And so ask your body. I always want to say ask your thighs. I think it's actually probably located in your gut, but energetically, it feels like you have to pull people's consciousness even lower to keep them out of their head. Don't time travel. Look down at your feet. Where are you right now? Are your needs met right now? Okay, because a lot of like the hellish experiences are based on what you did before or what's going to happen in the future. Mm-hmm. What is happening today? Where am I at today? Is there something that I can do to change this actionably? Then do it. If not, then, you know, worry about, cross that bridge when you come to it. And the other thing is that reality, the manifestation aspect of the matrix is an algorithm. And that algorithm is currently set until you learn how to set intentions on what you're paying attention to. There's a great book called ET 101, a book I have read because it's like 12 pages. It's from the 80s or something. And a line from that is, the reality that you experience is none other than an audiovisual demonstration of where your attention is. The universe assumes that your attention is on that which you desire and gladly provides you with more of the same. So, it's like being on Instagram, you know, if you're following a bunch of pages, facelifts, a personal favorite of mine, and you're looking at them every day and watching all their content, they're going to start to give you advertisements for facelifts. That's not actually happened. Clothing designers, whatever. So it would be absurd for you to be going to pages every single day of things that you hate, but that's what we do. We pay attention to the things we don't like. So understand that there is no conspiracy against you. The reality is just, the matrix is just a server coming to your table. If all you ever talk about is your lack, if all you ever talk about is your external enemies, it just those are the things you engage with. So it brings you more pages that you engage with. And you have to learn how to wallow in gratitude, which is not cheesy, forcing yourself to be grateful for things, but really learn how to pay the majority of your attention to that which you desire so that the universe will provide you with more of that. Anyway, that's my too long didn't read.
No, this is great. It's helped me out. I know that. And I think it will help the audience if you check out Jess's work and do her things. One thing I wanted to mention as you were talking, is the idea of memories. And AA never helped, because sometimes, you know how bad memories will just come up when you're trying to go to sleep or you're walking around. It's like, ah, shit, I stole money from work so I could buy cocaine, or I was really rude to this person and broke her heart. And now I realize these things are actually positive. They're for my benefit. They're here to help. Any good or bad memory is a teaching tool. It's something I need to look at. It's a blind spot in my past that I need to investigate to get the full picture. So these are all good. The idea, as you said, internalized capitalism, that it's somehow trying to torture me. That was a lie I told myself for a long time, and I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I intermittently have. Last year was a big year when I was just chronically depressed and sick. Oh, I just spent entire days with that voice going, do you remember when you did that? Because I've done a lot. I've lived a lot of life. I've been several different flavors of awful. And, you know, I am someone who has a lot of space for other people's stuff, like a lot of space. And I'm not judgmental. I do like to shit on things like the New Age movement, but that's mostly just for lols. You know, I just think it's funny. But genuinely, like, people can come to me from all walks of life, and I am able to embrace and hold space for a lot. And I believe that's because I am in touch with the parts of me that have been awful, you know, and all I can do is make the decision every day to not be awful. And that's it. You know, that's really all we can do. I think that the ability to look at the things that you've done and face them is, and I've always preferred the company of addicts. I would say that's just recently shifted. I didn't used to trust anyone who hadn't been an addict, because I felt like people who have lived this life have really faced their darkness. And I think that everyone has darkness. And the darkness that I really don't like the feeling of is that nice dark, that darkness is just like boiling under the surface and is so shadowy, and that person has no awareness of it. And they're like, and it's like coming out of them sideways. I'd rather someone who's like shot dope in their neck. You know what I mean? Just like, I'd rather someone who stole their parents' rent. I would rather someone who's aware of their shadow.
Amen. Because yeah, we have to integrate it. And as you say, the shadow is as much part of us as the other part.
So yeah,
the duality has to end for the better of everyone. So yeah, this has been great. As always, I truly enjoy talking to you, Jessa, and appreciate you coming on Finding Hermes this time. So for the audience, and where can they find out more about you? And again, I'll have it on the show notes, and I'll make sure it's scrolling across the screen as you talk.
Jessaree.com has links to everything. I did a podcast with a Mormon called Mormon and the Method years ago. Mm-hmm. Super cringy to me that it still exists on the internet, but it has a lot of these themes.
Nothing ever goes away on the internet.
Oh, you know, man, just so cringy. I just like can't even fathom that version of myself that people can look at it. My current podcast is Awakening OD. It's an eighth dimensional being giving you tips for surviving the matrix. I have a Patreon. I don't recommend getting on the Patreon unless you've consumed all the other content and think you still like me. Do you know? I do sessions. I also don't recommend doing that unless you've already listened to all this stuff and for some reason still think that's a good idea. Don't worry about it. I'm not much for self-promotion.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah, I know you talked about you were leaving, what, I don't know if you wanted to leave stand-up or addiction, but you said, I'm going to go sell cars. I was like, that would be just a pivoting to sell cars. There she is.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything.
Well, awesome. Well, you've taught me a lot, and I know our audience will enjoy your insights. So thank you very much for coming on Finding Hermes, and until we talk again in some platform or another.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
And there you have it. Great conversation with Jessa Reed. I really dig her work and I really love what she's doing. And I hope you did too. She is one of my favorite figures in this sort of new generation of, I don't know, I really can't call them occultists or esotericists or even psychics. Maybe call them astrognostics or dreamtime paladins or knights or something like that. But what she's doing definitely works, and it is working in this age of Hermes, in this apocalypse of, well, many apocalypses that are happening as we change the age and the world ends in some way or another. So I definitely, and I love the way she pivots through things. She definitely has a lot of great context, soberish, meth in the meth, what is it called? Mormon in the meth head and other stuff. And when she's done, it's done. And you won't see any more of these, this type of content or podcast, but you can definitely find them on the internets and I would check it out. And I look forward to whatever else Jessa pivots to in the future. I have been on her podcast and her Patreon a couple of times, and she's got a great tribe of people with some fascinating ideas who, again, are trying to get through this age of Hermes and these weird times that we live in today. One thing I should have mentioned too, or I wanted to mention, but sometimes you just get raptured in the conversation and the synergy, was there is an episode of Soberish where Jessa talks about manifesting. And this goes to the law of attraction and the dreaded The Secret movie or book or whatever the hell it is. And Jessa has some astute insights on this. She says you can manifest. The problem is that people manifest through their thoughts. And, well, you can't trust your thoughts. Thoughts come and go. As the in Tibetan Buddhism, when I do meditation, we see thoughts as simply clouds. They're ephemeral, they're useful, they have a purpose, but you can't count on them and you certainly can't predict them. On Aeon Byte, I have mentioned studies about how we make decisions long before our conscious mind makes a decision. In other words, study participants find out that the part of the brain that makes decisions, the activity is already there seconds before the conscious mind, the ego, has made a decision about picking something at a store. So when we make, when we try to manifest or do the law of attraction through our thoughts, there's going to be some blowback. As Bernardo Kastrup said, the first directive of the mind is to deceive us. And as I've said before, Hermes is the god of the mind, but he's the god of tricks. We are in a game with ourselves and with the world. So don't go with your thoughts. Jessa further says that when we manifest, we're really manifesting through our beliefs, that conglomeration of, some thoughts, our past, our trauma, our culture, everything else is our beliefs. And it's our beliefs that will probe the universe for what it wants. So what we need to do to manifest better sometimes means changing our beliefs. And ironically, to change our beliefs, we've got to go inward to find our truer self or what our true will is in this life. What we really want out of life, or why we are here, what brings us bliss and ecstasy, and then create some new beliefs around it. So again, ironically, it is about introspection. But with these new beliefs, we will be able to really manifest better in the universe. So something to consider. I like what Damien Eccles said in his book, Angels and Archangels. In one section, he says, "Where attention goes, energy flows. We want our attention to support our growth and progress, not detract from it. When our minds are full of what we're doing right now, how we're feeling and what we're thinking in this moment, then we can be fully present and create a feedback loop that sustains us as opposed to sending our energy out into whatever random thought and fear happens to be crossing our minds. Wise advice, Damien, and it fits into what Jess is saying. So change your beliefs if things aren't working out, and don't trust your thoughts. They're just clouds, or clouds in your coffee, clouds in your coffee, as the song You're So Vain says by Carly Simon. On this topic, too, I like what Rachel Connerly once told me. She said that another way to manifest is through appreciation. Not exactly gratitude, because gratitude is kind of passive. You're not embedded in the universe, in life, in yourself. But when you appreciate something, you're interacting with it. Like a glass of wine, you can be thankful that there's a glass of wine in front of you at dinner, but to truly appreciate it, you're into the taste. You're into how it tastes with the food and how it fits in with the conversation or the texture of that evening as you're drinking wine. So think about appreciation more than gratitude, and you might find manifesting things in your life. But there's nothing wrong with gratitude. When I was on Sam Tripoli's podcast, he talked about how gratitude is one of the greatest forms of magic out there. You write it down, make sure you bring it out from your mind into a piece of paper as an intention, and then that is sent out into the universe, and the universe will respond accordingly. So gratitude is magic, and gratitude is certainly an ego killer if your ego is out of control. But appreciation really gets you down into the battlefield, if you would. Lastly, I wanted to bring up again the book Awareness by Anthony DeMello. And I called it Awakening in the interview because, the book is about awakening. Anthony does say very astutely and simply that spirituality is simply waking up, seeing reality for what it is and seeing yourself for what you are with all its potential and, downfalls and misgivings and all that jazz. But Awareness was a book, as I mentioned, that opened a door into understanding my own codependence. And obviously all addicts are codependent. And it really helped me out in a lot of ways and still does. Of course, check out all the books Jessa mentioned on codependence and other things like aliens. But Anthony DeMello was a Jesuit priest who was also a psychotherapist. And he pivoted to some very Gnostic places as he saw the absurdity of our culture and reality and who we were. And he also released an understanding of the beauty of different religions, a perennialism about how we can understand who we are and get better. Most people, as he says, just want relief. They don't want a cure. But he put out some amazing books on comparative religions and mystical insights that really showed how people thrived in this black iron prison, as Philip K. Dick called the world. One of the central themes, too, in Anthony's book, Awareness, is, beyond spirituality is waking up, is you're an ass, I'm an ass. Again, he exposes how absurd our egoic constructs are and the different rules we live in life and how silly our beliefs are at the end of the day, and offers advice on how to change beliefs. So highly recommend Anthony DeMello's Awareness and his other books. By the way, his Awareness is based on some lectures, and you can find these lectures on YouTube and other places on the internet. So check it out, and definitely check out Jessa's work, because she's doing amazing work, I think, and you are amazing too, and I hope this show, as all other Finding Hermeses, or whatever you want to call them, have helped you walk through those doors, lay your cards on the table, and as Mary Magdalene and Joseph Campbell said, become transparent to the transcendent. Thanks for being here.